have you done profiling of the types of people that join hate groups and what types of people?
Yeah, I mean, not scientifically, but yes, we did sort of one particular very serious look. We called it our youth issue a few years ago. We kind of looked at, how do people really get into these groups? What are the mechanisms? What kind of kids get in? Because that's where all the action is, right? I mean, these groups are not so interested in recruiting, 60-year-old white men from the South. They very much are interested in college-bound white kids, right? Kids who are going to be, because they've realized very consciously in their own heads that, to get a bunch of thugs in your group, really, if your aim really is Aryan revolution, you want to have this sort of Jew-free society and no people of color and all the rest of it, you're really organizing toward that seriously, it's not going to help you very much to have a bunch of skinheads beating people up on corners, right? You've got to have real leaders who can organize a political movement. So they're very conscious that, our tactics in the past, recruiting skinheads out of bars and that kind of thing, are not terribly effective. We need the smart kids. all that to say, we tried to look at, how do these kids come in? One of the most remarkable things you find, and this is backed up by a lot of academic studies too, is that very, very, very few kids come into this movement on ideological reasons. In other words, it's not that the kid hates Jews or hates black people or hates gay people or whatever it might be. It's that, they got a lousy situation at home. The father left 20 years ago, the mother works, 14 hours a day or whatever it may be. Or, they fight all the time. Or, whatever the problem is at home, there's some kind of dysfunctionality at home. And, it's just like every other kind of gang, right? I remember as a newspaper reporter writing about Latino girl gangs. And it was the same thing. You talk to the sociologist, say, look, it's creating an alternative family. Their family at home is bad news for whatever reason. So you go out on the street and you kind of create your own family. And, when you really look at like neo-Nazi skinhead groups, which are very much youth groups, that's true. I mean, it's not, they don't really spend so much time sitting around talking about killing the Jews as they do, kind of, it's a little subculture. And it's a subculture that gives a kid a lot, right? I mean, for a kid who's got trouble at home, who nobody likes him at school or whatever it might be, this is a little world where everybody sits around and says, you're a great guy or you're a great gal, you're right, your parents are idiots, they don't even know the Holocaust was baloney, right, that the Jews made that up, so there's kind of secret knowledge. It's like being in a club. I mean, it reminds me of, 10-year-old boys in a treehouse. And there's all this other stuff that comes with it, right? There's pot to smoke, there's methamphetamine to snort, there are girls for the boys, so it's a whole little world unto itself and a very kind of comforting one, I think, for a kid who doesn't feel, any sense of sort of belonging or feels rejected. I think of a girl we interviewed, a woman named Angie King, who, this was very much her experience. She kind of grew up in a so-so family. Her parents fought all the time. Her father wasn't a very nice guy. Ultimately, I think she was in her sophomore year of high school, her parents get divorced. She's living in West Broward County, which is Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And when they get divorced, the mom is now broke, right? Like happens to a lot of families. They take her out of private, I think she's in a private Catholic school, if I remember, and they put her into a public school with a lot of racial tensions, Cooper City High in Broward County. And she's not a particularly pretty girl, and she goes in, and she's completely rejected. No one will talk to her, and it turns out the only kids at that school who will talk to Angie are the skinheads. And, so she's kind of welcomed into this world, and, lo and behold, 4 years later, she's sitting in a car while her friends rob a convenience store and beat up the owner, or not a convenience store, a video rental store, and nearly kill the guy. And Angie King winds up going to prison for 4 years, federal prison. And the kind of amazing end of that story, for whatever it's worth, is that it's kind of a remarkable end, is that, in prison too, by now Angie's covered in, swastika tattoos and SS lightning bolts on her neck and all that kind of thing. And that's hard to get away from, especially when you go to prison. And she's completely shunned in prison now. And what happens to her in the end is that it winds up being the Jamaican women, these sort of coal black women in prison, who become her big friend. And basically what they say to her, by her account, is, they grew up in kind of a similar world. We grew up hearing about what terrible people white people were. But you grow up and you realize doesn't really always seem to be true. And so they sort of forgive her her swastika tattoos, and she comes out a completely changed person. She's in college now, giving talks, you know, to kids in colleges. And she's a very smart woman, actually. So, you know, that's really what we found out, is that, you know, we interviewed a lot of kids, especially in Southern California, and it seemed like they all had the same story. I mean, they were so similar, the stories about what happened between their father and mother, the trouble at home, you know, how they were kind of left alone. And also there's, I should say, a kind of series of steps for a lot of them, and this was real obvious. We're looking at a particular group called the Nazi Lowriders in Southern California. You know, kids basically, and you know, what would happen is that the kid would have these troubles at home, the recruit. He would hook up in some way with these kids in the Nazi lowriders, who are, you know, seem to be a friendly bunch to him, and they would go, you know, kind of hang out the streets together and so on. Every once in a while, they might beat up, you know, some unfortunate black kid who walks through their neighborhood or something like that. More often than that, they were running methamphetamine on the streets. So eventually, you know, the kid gets grabbed by the cops, right? It happens almost every time. And, you know, that kid goes off to juvenile hall for 6 months or whatever it is, right? And when that same young guy, and typically it is a guy, comes out and comes back to the gang, now he's a POW, right? Now he's got this extra status. So, you know, all of a sudden, sort of more of the girls in the group are, you know, could be his. He's a big man on campus now. You know, and ultimately it repeats itself again when that same kid maybe goes off now to adult prison, where this is really a serious business and people get killed in racial fights in prisons. And, you know, and that guy is being supported the whole time he's in as a quote-unquote POW by, you know, letters from all the women in the group and so on. And when he comes back, he's a great big Aryan hero. So, you know, the picture I'm trying to paint is, you know, they build you up, and, you know, most of these kids come from places where they've never had anything like it. They were nobody. And nobody paid any attention to them, you know. And it's easy for them to kind of transmute that feeling of, you know, everybody acts like I'm nothing, you know, I don't count for anything, and you know, and of course, what they're told is, yeah, that's true of all white people. So, you know, these groups have this weird view of the world where, as they say, whites are the most endangered species on the planet Earth. So it's like they're living in some kind of alternative reality, right, where it's not black people or gay people or brown people who are oppressed or who have been oppressed. It's white people, and it's the wicked, politically correct, you know, media, and it's people like the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, who in their mind are, you know, we're trying to destroy the white race and, you know, the Slavic race and all this kind of thing.